Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. My name is Abubakar Jalo. We're coming to you live from Bonn in Germany.
And I'm Eunice Onjiro. Remember, we're also live on Facebook, so do send us your comments. Coming up in the program, it's World AIDS Day. And in Uganda, the government is urging mostly young men to take their treatment for HIV.
It's not a death sentence. We know that we have treatment, although it is not a cure. But once you start on treatment, you're able to avoid the disease related to AIDS.
And Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, gives key cabinet positions to senior military figures, but there is disappointment among ordinary Zimbabweans.
I think it's just a recycling of dead wood. There's nothing new in this new cabinet. It doesn't boost any morale or raise any confidence. There's not even one youth in the new cabinet. Imagine the Minister of Youth is somebody who is almost 7 years old, so I don't think there's anything to celebrate.
All this, plus a look at your comments on our Facebook page, coming up right here on Africa Link. But first, let's listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Former White House National Security Advisor Michael Flynn has been charged on Friday with lying to the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. Court documents show Flynn is accused of lying to investigators about his conversation with a Russian ambassador just days after U.S. President Donald Trump was inaugurated in January. Flynn is expected to plead guilty and has turned himself in to the FBI. In Germany, the leader of the center-left Social Democrats, Martin Schulz, says all options are still open for forming a government with Chancellor Angela Merkel's conservatives. Speaking earlier today, Schulz said party leaders will consider whether to start preliminary coalition talks before delivering a recommendation at a conference later this month. Schulz had earlier rejected any possibility of teaming up with the conservatives again, but following a breakdown of coalition talks last week, Schulz said he wasn't ruling anything out.
There was broad support for not ruling out any options when it comes to forming a government. We have an acting government in place. We're not under any time pressure. The SPD party leadership will discuss on Monday which recommendation we will give to the party conference.
The United Nations has appealed for a record amount of humanitarian aid, asking the worldwide community to lend around 20 billion euros to assist nearly 100 million at-risk people in need of food, shelter, emergency care, and other basic assistance. Speaking in Geneva, Mark Lowcock, UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, blamed conflict and violence for the humanitarian crisis.
The big drivers of humanitarian need for 2018 will continue to be conflict and violence, which forces people to flee from their homes, denies them access to adequate food, and robs them of their livelihoods.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Cameroon's President Paul Biya has denounced repeated attacks by what he calls are a band of terrorists claiming to be part of a separatist movement. Biya blamed the English-speaking militants for killing four Cameroonian soldiers and two policemen. Cameroon's mainly French-speaking government has been accused of killing dozens of Anglophone civilians in the western part of the country since October. Anti-government protesters have taken to the streets for a second day of planned demonstrations against the long-term presidency of Faure Gnassingbé, who has ruled the West African country for more than 15 years. Protests in capital Lomé were mostly calm, according to witnesses, although protests over the past 3 months have resulted in at least 16 deaths. More than a dozen opposition parties want to impose a two-term limit on the presidential mandate and restrict Gnassingbé from running in upcoming elections. And in sports, German national football team coach Joachim Löw was in Moscow on Friday for the 2018 World Cup draw, where 32 countries were divided into eight groups. Defending champions Germany drew Mexico in the Group F, meaning the defending champs are to open against Mexico. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from Bonn in Germany. I'm Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. Now, as Uganda joins the rest of the world to commemorate World AIDS Day, the country's vigorous campaign towards HIV and AIDS prevention and treatment has been boosted with $478 million from the Global Fund.
Now, Eunice, this money will enable over 1 million Ugandans living with HIV to get free drugs from government health facilities across the country over the next 3 years. Although the prevalence rates have dropped, more than 1.4 million people are still affected with HIV.
And now Uganda is now on course to achieve a global goal that seeks to ensure that by the year 2020, 90% of those diagnosed with HIV are on antiretroviral therapy. Frank Higa in Kampala with more.
...36-year-old Richard Sonko works along the shores of Lake Victoria. He was diagnosed with HIV at the age of 8 after constantly falling ill when his parents died of AIDS. To save his life, doctors put him on antiretroviral therapy. He tells me, little did he know, by getting tired of swallowing daily tablets and later on abandoning medication, he was digging his grave.
Once in a while, I missed taking my daily ARVs. After I completely stopped for about 8 months, I felt the drugs were too much for me. Slowly, I started feeling weak, falling sick on and off. Later, I realized maybe it is because I stopped taking my tablets. My life changed. My body weakened. I was seriously admitted in hospital. They put me on fresh treatment. Since then, I have never missed a single drug.
I meet Dr. Caroline Nakazi, a community health consultant, to tell me about the modalities of taking ARV for people living with HIV.
What we're giving now are drugs that are in a fixed dose combination, which we call FDC, and you take one pill a day. That is the easiest to take. But there are also other combinations where the drugs are taken once in the morning and another pill that is taken in the evening. But also on trial, we are having a long-acting trial of an ARV that takes 1 year. It's an injection. And after evaluation, we see how we roll it out in the community.
Dr. Nelson Buloba is the Director General of Uganda AIDS Commission. I meet him in his office in Tinda, a suburb of Kampala. He tells me being HIV positive is not a death sentence when those infected adhere to medical prescriptions and take their drugs daily. They will live a normal life.
It's not a death sentence. We know that we have treatment, although it is not a cure, but once you start on treatment, you're able to avoid the disease related to AIDS, but you must adhere to your treatment and take it every day. Initially, avoid getting HIV positive.
During Uganda's commemoration of World AIDS Day, under the theme Reaching men, girls and young women to reduce new HIV infections, men have been urged to spearhead testing for HIV because research shows few go for testing and continue to infect girls and young women.
Frank Higa in Kampala, Uganda.
And on Facebook and on WhatsApp, we ask users to tell us how government in their countries are dealing with stigma against HIV-positive people. Peter Modisa in South Africa says, we see HIV-positive people as normal as negative people. Treatment is free. Sensitization about this disease is also there. South Africa is actually trying to prevent mother-to-child transmission.
And Prince Ojong says Ghana is a real example for the African countries to emulate. I wonder what example he's talking about.
Thanks for those responses. We'll get to more of those a little later in the program. Now, Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, announced a fresh cabinet with key roles given to veterans of the ruling ZANU-PF party and senior soldiers. None of the opposition politicians received a post in the cabinet, even though the president had promised an all-inclusive government.
Now, many hope that the 75-year-old new president would give leading opposition politicians significant roles in an inclusive government in line with his promises to reach out to all patriotic Zimbabweans.
And as DW's Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, some people are now say they have lost hope that they gained when President Robert Mugabe resigned.
Zimbabwe's new 22-member cabinet appointed by President Emmerson Mnangagwa is composed of veterans of the ruling ZANU-PF party and senior soldiers. This has poured cold water on the speculation that Mnangagwa would invite members of the opposition. Terry Muchanga is one of the people who celebrated when former President Robert Mugabe resigned last week. He is now disappointed with the new cabinet.
I think it's just a recycling of dead wood. There's nothing new in this new cabinet. It doesn't bring even morale. It doesn't boost any morale or raise any confidence. There's not even one youth in the new cabinet. Imagine the Minister of Youth is somebody who is almost 70 years old. So I don't think there's anything to celebrate. If we are to fight for democracy in this country, we still have a long way to go.
On his return from a less than two-week-long exile, Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, said the country was at the dawn of a new democracy. He was referring to the resignation of Mugabe, who had ruled Zimbabwe since 1980. Legal analyst Love Momaduku, who is in support of the opposition, said there was not much to celebrate with Mnangagwa's new team.
The only change that has taken place is that Robert Mugabe is no longer the president in person, but he remains the president in terms of the system. You have seen the characteristics of a ZANU-PF government. One is that you reward those persons that are loyal by giving them cabinet or public appointments. So in this case, you reward the Major General Moyos for being bold to announce on television.
Maduku, who is also a law professor at the University of Zimbabwe, is referring to Major General Sibusiso Moyo, who appeared on state television to announce the recent military takeover. Christopher Muchangwa, the newly appointed Minister of Information, said he would not comment on the matter as he had not been inaugurated. Zimbabwe's President Mnangagwa has not indicated when he will swear in his government, which he said must rescue the moribund economy ahead of the Zimbabwe's 2018 elections.
Columbus Mavunga compiled that report in Harare. Eunice, you could hear actually the frustration in Zimbabweans.
Yes, and we have comments coming in also from our Facebook page and WhatsApp. Christopher Emmanuel Kabaza in Zambia, he's saying it's good that's what Trump did in the US, appointing generals in his cabinet.
And Farai Musuka, a Zimbabwean living in South Africa, says this is a disaster. Zimbabweans have betrayed. We are now a military state. Only God can save us now.
Well, thank you so much for your comments. We'll definitely come to them when time allows. Now, here in Germany, the Social Democrat SPD leader Martin Schulz says all options are still on the table for forming a government. Speaking earlier today, Schulz said party leaders will consider the options and present a recommendation at the party conference later this month.
Now, the SPD members will have the final word on whether to start talks with the Conservatives. Schulz had ruled out after September's elections, but he comes under intense pressure to help break the deadlock in forming a new government.
DW's Sumi Somaskanda spoke to Oliver Scarlett, where he started by telling her what he makes of Schulz's comments about his party being open to all options once again.
No news when it comes to the political stalemate in Germany, but we've just seen a very emotional and upset Martin Schulz. And if it's true what he said, that the Conservative Party deliberately gave wrong information to the press, then this certainly draws many questions on the mutual trust. And it certainly raises the question, how are they going to cooperate in the future with this breach of trust that has also happened a couple days before in smaller other issues. And Schulz, as you said, says now all options are on the table again, including a minority government.
Martin Schulz himself has been in a difficult position. He's had to change his position a few times. What do you think all of this means for his political fate?
That's right. First of all, he had to do this U-turn, or he would do a U-turn if he came back to the negotiating table to sort of like start exploratory talks. He's held accountable for an historic election. election defeat, so he's very much weakened in his position, of course. Any decision that is coming and following now, he was trying to put this on solid grounds, and this is why he wants to get his voter base approving this decision, and he wants time for that to get the best deal for his party to negotiate social democratic policies with the Conservative Party.
DW's correspondent Oliver Scarlett. Keep it Africa Link.
In case you've just joined us, this is DW's Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, DW's Migration Dilemma series makes a stop in Accra, Ghana, where many young people think a lack of prospect at home is driving them to seek a better life elsewhere.
I have been to Libya. I stayed in Libya for 3 years. When I started journey, I thought I was going to find something profitable to my life, something who can help me to make a living. We are treated like animals.
And in the German Bundesliga, FC Cologne plays Schalke this week, and two coaches may be forced to leave. Chuck Penfold will give us an inside track and juicy analysis on Germany's top football league.
And we have results from the World Cup draw in Russia coming up shortly. But before that, the Troika, a body comprising the United States, the United Kingdom and Norway, which has been watching and facilitating the peace process in South Sudan, is pushing parties to amend sections of the collapsed August 2015 peace agreement deal that has to date not yet been implemented.
The move suggests a push for a new peace deal in the country that has been torn apart by a four-year conflict. For DW, Wake Simon Wudu reports from South Sudan's capital, Juba.
A statement released by the three-country mediation team, the Troika, urged all warring factions to engage in revitalizing the peace agreement signed in 2015 in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Jame David, executive director of the Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, says the Troika mediating team should this time around be serious about holding the factions accountable for violating the terms of the accord.
What we see is that there has not been a very clear definition of the role of the mediators versus the interests of the regional countries that constitute IGAD. So this time, I think we need clarity in terms of what is it exactly that these mediators will do, and how can we deter the IGAD countries from poking their nose into the process of the peace agreement based on their interests?
The Revitalization Forum was called by heads of states of the East African body, IGAD, in June as efforts to renew the 2015 peace pact. The forum is set to start in mid-December. Analysts say the call for revitalizing the agreement suggests that several parts of the agreement have collapsed. The deal is being regarded now irrelevant to the current political situation in the country. The Troika members emphasizes that all parties to the conflict must negotiate and amend sections of the agreement that no longer reflect the reality of the conditions in South Sudan, particularly those related to power sharing, timelines and transitional arrangements. Bonjeri Peter, director of South Sudan Humanity, agrees with David, arguing the element of holding everyone participating in the peace process accountable should be highly considered as a strong mechanism.
We want to see Troika coming, not only coming to the parties who are in the conflict, but also look at those stakeholders. Try to seek JEMEC properly, because you are the body overseeing this. What milestone have you achieved?
In the next round of the talks, the body wants the forum to focus on monitoring mechanisms, effective security arrangements durable to stop the conflict, improve the human rights and humanitarian situation, and support a political process that produces an agreed viable elections.
DW's Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Now, migration has become a major issue for global leaders to deal with. Every day, there are more cases emerging of African migrants using illegal routes to enter Europe in order to seek greener pastures and a better life.
Many of these migrants travel through Libya, where some are captured and tortured, while others die or are sold as slaves. DW has been holding a migration debate in Accra to provide a platform for discussion and also help find a solution to the dilemma. Isaac Kaleji in Accra has more.
I have been to Libya. I stayed in Libya for 3 years. Actually, when I started journey, I thought I was going to find something profitable to my life, something who can help me to make a living. But I
That's Enoch Yeboah, 27 years old, who traveled from Ghana to Libya in 2013, hoping to cross over to Europe for greener pasture. His dream prior to traveling became a mirage when things went bad on this journey to Libya.
Took a bus from Tchimane to Niamey, that is the capital of Niger. From there, I proceed to Agadez. And there I got a medical man who said that he would help me. So the man charged me 200,000 CFA. So I paid the money and we used the desert to Libya. We were treated like animals. No respect for human rights. We were just like animals to them.
Enoch spent 3 years under harsh conditions in Libya and was rescued and brought back to Ghana. However, Enoch's story is not unique. Just this week, over 100 Ghanaians were repatriated from detention camps in Libya. Many of them said they were sold in Libya's slavery market. These Ghanaians are among hundreds of thousands of Africans who went through gruesome conditions in North Africa to try to enter Europe.
Okay. Thank you. So, my first comment
in Accra, DW held its Migration Dilemma series, hosted by its local partner Joy FM, entitled To Live or to Stay. It was meant to provide a platform for a discussion on why so many young people want to live to seek a better future in developed countries and how to encourage them to stay. The audience was much interested in the lack of opportunities at home for the youth.
There is no campaign. I mean, there is no television adverts, radio, something. I mean, to tell people how dangerous it is. When I was going, there was no news.
And so when you work more and earn less, sometimes you suffocate. You feel like moving because if I work for 8 hours and I'm forced to work extra without any pay, and I can work for 1 hour somewhere and get more dollars, that perception will push me to go out there, gather money and move.
A migration expert, Dr. Joseph Tay, said the reasons for people leaving their countries seeking greener pastures abroad are numerous and complex.
So the root causes are many: the poverty, the misconception, the policy and institutional problems I've mentioned.
Ghana's information minister is Mustafa Hamid. He said the Ghanaian government has a solution for the emerging threats of illegal migration.
Now, our answer since last year and since we came into government has been that let us focus on adding value to what we produce.
But for Enoch, who is now back home to start afresh, the talking and promising by African governments need to end. He wants that replaced with action.
The government should just create job opportunities and just employ the youth to just get something doing. Because if that time I was having something doing, I wouldn't have even traveled because I was just traveling to go and get money to come and start my own business, to start something doing.
The DW migration debate has ended in Accra, but the discussion continues in other African countries where the number of young people leaving their country for better life elsewhere is high.
Isaac Kaleji there in Accra, Ghana.
Now a response, a very good response from Akka Olivia, says, this is a joke. These African leaders have failed 100% to prepare the future of their youth. And then he went on with 6 very important suggestions. I think we'll take the time and read those out.
Yes, let's do that.
He says, all dictators must go.
And then we must revive our educational system and stop copying an old education from the West.
Agriculture should be taught from primary schools up to the university.
And government should invest in the mechanization of agriculture by buying heavy farm equipment.
And funds should be made available to all youths showing interest in agribusiness.
And money gotten from our raw materials such as gold, diamond, should be used in the construction of farm to market roads, schools, hospitals, and so on.
Thank you so much, Aga Olivia. Those points all are very, very important. Now, to some sports. We have the result from the World Cup draw in Russia. The very, very hot group there is Group B, which is Portugal, Spain, Morocco and Iran. Germany is in Group F with Mexico, Sweden and South Korea. We have Senegal in Group H with Poland, Colombia and Japan. Belgium is in Group G with England, Tunisia and Panama. And we have Group E, Brazil, Switzerland, Costa Rica, and Serbia. Very, very hot groups there. Really interesting. And now, we have Chokpo Emfol, who is now in the studio with us, and he gave us some of the description of how this, basically how the draw took place.
Yeah, basically, it's sort of a seeding system. So you've got names that will be drawn out of four different pots, going from one to four, obviously, and one to four in terms of the rankings, the October rankings of FIFA. So Germany, of course, are in the first one. Pot number one is our Russia, Brazil, Portugal, Argentina, Belgium, Poland, and France. These are all based on October's FIFA rankings. So these teams theoretically will get weaker teams in their group. So Germany should have won't say an easy group, but they can't run up against Brazil, for example, at the group stage.
What's the Germany's chances then of retaining this title?
I think they're pretty good. Joachim Löw, from pretty much the day after they won the World Cup in Brazil in 2014, has said his prime goal has been all the way to defend the World Cup in 2018.
We have three Africa countries that found themselves in one pot, Senegal, Egypt, and Tunisia. The two others are Nigeria and Morocco, are in the next pot. Is that quite normal?
Yeah, it goes by the FIFA rankings. You've got Serbia down there as well, Panama, the South Korea, Saudi Arabia. This can happen. It doesn't mean they're going to wind up in the same group. In fact, I think there's a rule they can't wind up in the same group.
Now to Bundesliga. Cologne is meeting Schalke this weekend after Schalke put up a stunning performance against Dortmund last week. What are Cologne's chances of winning this game?
The chances are pretty slim, but there's an old saying that goes something like, you know, that's why we watch the game. Part of me thinks Cologne are probably going to get crushed because Schalke are on a high after coming back from that four-goal deficit to tie at Dortmund in the big Ruhr derby last weekend. Domenico Tedesco seems to be doing a great job as the first-year coach there. Cologne, on the other hand, have had all kinds of bad luck this season, including with the video assistant referees. And Peter Stöger, the coach, he's been very cool and very classy about the whole thing for the longest time. But in his pregame press conference, he actually had a bit of a dig at management because he's been given a guarantee that he'll be on the bench for Schalke and not beyond. As somebody said, we're going game by game. And he said, you know, I don't think that's fair to me, the players, you know, or the whole club. You either have to say, you know, you have to make a decision one way or the other. So he's not a happy camper. Obviously, he hasn't won, but he's a little bit annoyed with the club.
It does boil down to the fact that he doesn't have the support. And now they are actually blaming not just Peter Stöger anymore. They're also putting blames on the pitch.
Well, yeah, I don't think you can do that. I mean, they have had a lot of bad luck. They've had a terrible luck with injuries. I think they've got about 12 regulars right now. So they've got some reserves coming into the side just to make up the numbers. As I say, they had a terrible time with the VAR. And even though they haven't actually played that bad a lot of times, they haven't been finishing their chances. And the big thing you can come back to, I guess, is Anthony Modeste. The guy that scored all those goals last year is gone. They bought somebody to replace him, John Cordoba from Mainz, and he hasn't been scoring, and now he's injured. So it's just basically a perfect storm in a negative way for Cologne this season.
It's bad luck upon bad luck. Now, what do we need to look out for this weekend in the Bundesliga?
Well, you can look out for another coach to get sacked as well. I hate to be so negative, but so Peter Bosch, these two guys, Peter Bosch and Peter Stöger, it's been sort of the sacking watch on for them for weeks now. And Dortmund are in Leverkusen, and that's going to be a tough one as well. So it could very well be that we have two coaches sacked on Sunday morning.
And they're both called Peter.
And they're both called Peter.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
DW's Chuck Penfold.
Now, I want to take us back to the migration topic that we just had, where DW has been holding migration debate in Accra. And we have comments coming in. Cruz Timo says, no, it should not just be to back an evacuation plan. Libya needs strong punishment to whoever is involved.
Indeed, the migration debate is continuing across Africa. We have a response here from Rugeyama Kawa, who says the evacuation plan is for saving Europe from unwanted immigrants. What did African leaders get in return? Probably some assurances that their bank accounts and properties in Europe will not be confiscated.
Well, that's all we had from the Migration Dilemma. Thank you very much for your comments and for keeping it African-led.
I think we can bring one or two more responses on World AIDS Day today, right?
Oh, yes, it's World AIDS Day. Yeah, we can bring one or two comments.
Yeah, we have a response here from, I can see, from Isaac writing from Monrovia, Liberia. He says, I have lived in Liberia since 2010, and I would say I have not seen any stigmatization of people living with HIV. Life for them is as normal as for anyone else.
Yeah, he was actually responding to a question which was asked whether how governments are dealing with stigma against HIV-positive people in their different countries.
Thanks so much, Isaac, for that comment. Well, that's all we had time for. It's been a pleasure of having you this week on Africa Link. I'm Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm Eunice Njiro, wishing you a great weekend ahead.